This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. This is Coach Jen from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Christy Landwehr from Aurora, Colorado, and you are listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for this Tuesday, July 19th, episode 1476. This episode is brought to you by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Good morning, Horse World.
Houston, we have a problem.
Ability equals skill plus knowledge.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Here's a safety tip for you from the Certified Horsemanship Association.
Missed it by that much.
How can I change this to make it better the next time?
Help you, I can't. Yeah.
Time for Training Tuesday on Horses in the Morning with the Certified Horsemanship Association. Well, hidey-ho, Christy. Welcome back.
Hi, Jen. I'm so excited to have you today as my co-host. That's exciting.
See, we can totally geek out on horse training and riding instruction this time because Glenn's not here to interrupt.
We can. See, that horse husband and his driving stuff, you know, it's time for a little, we'll swap it out every now and then.
There will be no talk about Pokemon. There will be no movie reviews. It's just going to be all horse training this time.
Well, I have to tell you something funny. So the other day I was talking to my husband, John, and I go, hey, there's this great horse husband thing that the Horse Radio Network does. I think you should be interviewed. And he said, no. And I go, why not? It would be really fun. And he goes, I am not that kind of person. I would not know what to say. I'm the introvert. You're the extrovert. No. I said, okay, fine. But he can't say I didn't try.
That's really funny. Just a flat out no, huh?
Oh, yeah. Didn't even hesitate.
Oh, that's funny. Well, there you go.
It's all right. You know, not everyone is willing to play in the sandbox, and that is okay-dokay.
Not everybody is comfortable with the whole microphone thing.
That's right.
Now, is your husband overall introverted, or is he only introverted about certain aspects of the world?
I would say certain aspects of the world. Like, he would never get up in front of our church with a microphone and say anything, whereas my 9-year-old son gets up there all the time and does announcements. He has no problem with it. My husband is in the back of the church in the sound booth making everyone sound good, who is up there with a microphone. That's what he likes to do. He's more the techie, behind-the-scenes kind of guy.
He likes to be behind the scenes. I totally get that. I'm generally more comfortable that way, too. Yes.
Yet here you are. You can do both. You're a multitasker.
I'm a multitasker. Nobody listens to this. I'm not worried. Nobody's listening.
Right, Jen. Sure they are. I want all of those of you that are listening to immediately get on social media and let Jen know right now that you are.
There we
indeed,
go.
Listening.
Jump on Facebook and let everybody know I'm listening. You know, I think an interesting thing to chat about sometime on one of the shows is the introvert versus the extrovert human personality and how that meshes with a similar personality type in horses. Because I honestly think that some horses tend to be that way too.
Oh, without a doubt. Yes. I would agree.
Yeah.
We have a great board member. Her name is Ann Brzezicki, and she's with Middle Tennessee State University. And she and I went and got trained in real colors, which is basically a color personality inventory, or either orange, blue, gold, green, combination of all the above. And she started doing that with her school horses because she's really involved in intercollegiate, where, of course, you draw a horse out of a hat.
Yeah.
And you have that little preparatory circle before you go jump it or do the reining pattern or whatever. And she would tell her students as they're coming by on the rail, you're on an orange horse, you're on a blue horse. And then that kid would immediately know, I got to ride this way during my jumps. Or I've got to ride this way during my reining pattern. And it really increased their scores. So to get her on to talk about that might be fun. We'll have to think about that in the future.
That's a fascinating topic too. Because you don't have to, when you ride a horse and train a horse, and basically when you're riding him, you're always training him, you're not just riding the physical horse, you're also riding the mental horse. You're riding that personality, and you have to be able to speak to that, both figuratively
Absolutely.
And literally. Interesting stuff. Dang, we're good.
It's fun. I'm making a note. Note taken.
So what is going on over at the CHA right now? I know you guys have constantly got fascinating educational things going on. What's the latest?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, our clinics now are starting to wind down. We do most of them April, May, and June. I think everyone wants to prepare prior to their busy summer. So clinics have slowed down, though we definitely still have a few left in the fall for those that want to get certified. Right now, though, the big thing that's going on is the educational conferences, where there's no certification but a lot of learning. So our next one is in August, and that one's going to be the 26th and 28th at McLennan Community College, which is in Waco, Texas. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be one in September on the 10th and 11th in Wyoming and at Laramie County Community College in Cheyenne. And then in October, we have one at the end of the month, October 28th through 30th, that's going to be at the Fillmore Equestrian Center in Fillmore, California, which is just east of Ventura County, for those of you that live there. So get on our website, and anyone is invited, and you can come and network and learn and play with us at those three events.
So when you guys do your educational clinics, does one have to be a current CHA member to attend?
Absolutely not. Open to anybody.
It's open to everybody. Now, I'm guessing this is the way most organizations work. I don't know if CHA does. If you attend as a member, you pay one price. If you attend as a non-member, it's a different price.
You are correct.
Okay. So you just go to CHA-AHSE.org. Did I get it right?
Yes, you did get it right. And the other way to find us is just CHA Instructors, which goes to our online database, but you can find everything on our menu bars there too, like our conference.
Yeah. And if you can manage to spell Certified Horsemanship Association, it will come up on anybody's search engine. It's easy to find.
It will. Yeah. Yes, it will.
So what about the big conference? What's going on for Nashville?
Yes, so that one is coming together great. It's going to be the 19th through the 23rd. And on the 19th, we're actually going to have Schlese Saddlery come in and do a saddle fit kind of mini certification. Theirs
cool.
is actually a week long, but it's a mini one-day one for people that are interested in that. And Johan's going to do both English and Western. So that's exciting on the Wednesday before. And then that Thursday, Friday, and Saturday is when the event takes place at Middle Tennessee State University. And again, open to anybody. You can come just for the day. You can come for the whole thing. We feed you. Your meals are part of your conference fee. And you can get on a horse and ride. It's not a hotel-based conference. It's an actual hands-on conference with the school horses that are provided by MTSU. And then we also are going to be having the NRHA, National Reining Horse Association, bring their reining horses from a local trainer in Tennessee. So we're going to ride a reiner again, which is always fun.
Oh, that is a blast.
For those that have never had a chance. Yeah. So come one, come all.
So the Nashville International Conference begins the 19th of July?
Of October.
Of October. See, there we go. We need the October part. So that's in October. Nashville in October should be just beautiful.
Yes, we don't have to deal with the stickiness. You know, coming from Colorado, you people and dealing with humidity like Florida, Nashville, you guys are tougher than me. My sweat glands don't work that hard, and I think they revolt a little bit.
Do we need to put you on some non-sweater medication?
Probably. And I heard sometime this old-time cowboy guy, he goes, you know those horses that don't sweat? And I said, yeah. He goes, give them a can of Coors Light. That'll help them. And I said, huh. Does it have to be Coors Light? He said, well, that's my preference. I said, okay. Alrighty then.
See, I've heard different versions of that same home remedy, but they all revolve around a beer of some sort.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And I don't know if there's any scientific basis, but lots of horses like beer.
Yes.
So it would now see, we're going to have to tie this into the horse personality type. If you are a Coors Light rider, is your horse a Coors Light horse or is he more of a Guinness kind of a horse? Do you and your horse like the same kind of beer?
That would be entertaining.
Yeah.
We should do an experiment. Maybe we could get our PhDs and do a dissertation.
Absolutely.
Do you think that would be allowed?
Or
the vet schools would love that, I'm sure.
At the very least, a multi-million dollar study.
That's right. We will get the funding.
There we go. And so everybody, you're going to mark your calendar for October of this year, beginning on the 19th of October, the Nashville International Conference. Go there. Drag your friends and family along if you want to, because Nashville is a really, really fun town to visit, in addition to going to the conference. So I encourage everybody to do that. And now, what's this here? I hear about a party coming up in January for the CHA.
Oh, yes. We are turning 50.
Woo-hoo!
Unbelievable. So CHA has been around
AARP
since 1967. Too. Well, yeah. And what's so good about this is that I am not 50. So CHA was before my time. Just saying, making that clear to everybody that I was not with CHA at the beginning.
That's funny.
So it is. It's starting. We're going to go ahead and start with a big party in January, meaning that we're redoing our membership cards. We're going to be redoing our website. We're going to be doing all kinds of fun things on social media and in our monthly e-blast, really featuring the people that have been with us for 50 years. We have some members that are still with us and have been since the beginning, and I bet they're wishing they had bought a life membership.
Is that something you can do?
Oh, yes, but I don't think you could start doing it until the 80s, and I don't think that they bought one then either. So these people have given us a lot of money, and we thank them for that. That is great.
So a lifetime membership is something you can get through the CHA. That's a brilliant idea, though, to do that.
Yes, you sure can, and we actually do a discount at conference. So for people that attend our conference, it's $100 less for the life membership, too, which is nice.
Because, you know, typically when someone becomes a riding instructor, they do it for life. We don't do this because we want to, oh, let's try being a riding instructor for a year or three until we start college. We kind of tend to stick with it for life.
That is true.
Yeah. So that's a great idea.
And then we might go part-time, we might go full-time, but we always have just a few students. Even if we sell our school horses, if we have a life change, we still will drive to people's barns and help them. You know how it is, Jen.
Oh,
we
absolutely.
Always kind of have our fingers in the pie. Yeah.
I find myself inviting my friends to come over here and ride because we have a lovely riding arena right behind the house. I invite them over here to ride just so I can teach them. It's like, oh, can I just tell you stuff? You don't have to listen. You don't have to follow my directions, but I kind of miss it.
I know. I do the same thing, and I'm sure my friends, maybe that's why I don't get invited on a lot of trail rides. But I love going on trail rides with my friends, because then out on the trail, I can say, oh, and by the way, in case you're interested, this might help you. And they're like looking at me like, great, here she goes again.
That was a learning curve for me when I became a non-professional rider, gave up riding for a living and gave up teaching for a living. That was a bit of a learning curve for me when I would go out riding socially, and it was generally in a casual trail riding kind of a way, to not butt in. Because you're right.
Yeah.
You kind of get the stink eye if you do too much of that on a trail ride. And I had to be careful. It was kind of a learning curve. I was so used to telling everybody how to ride. That's what I did for a living. And I had to work at it. So now I have to take my frustrations out on a couple of my riding buddies down here in Florida. And they just roll their eyes and put their heels down and say, okay, Jen, we understand.
Here she goes. Well, I'll tell you, this is a great lead into today's topic about pet peeves, because one of my pet peeves now on these trail rides is actually being with people that I have to help in order to have them survive the trail ride. I would much rather go with my girlfriends that I don't have to teach or say a word to, so that I can seriously just enjoy myself and have a good time.
Yeah.
So it's become the opposite now. I have some
good trail riding pet peeves too. So this is going to be a fun show, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, why don't we get on with it and get Christina Burdick on the phone here?
Yes, we sure can. So let me introduce her, and we can go ahead and interview her here in just a sec. But pet peeves around the barn and on the trail, and the key, Jen, is solutions to solve them.
There
so
we're
we not
go.
Just going to moan about it. We're also going to give you some solution steps. So our first guest today is Christina Burdick. She is a longtime horsemanship instructor with over 30 years in the business. She is a CHA instructor and also a regional director for us. She was in North Carolina, and she just recently moved to California, like literally within the last 2 or 3 weeks. So we can certainly chat with her about that. And we are thrilled to have her on the show today. Hi, Christina. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you for having me, Christy.
So I was just telling Jen earlier today that you just had a move from North Carolina to California. So tell us exactly where you are now in California.
Yes, this is the second time we've made a cross-country move, and now we are in Ramona, California horse country and loving it here. No shortage of horse activities, for sure.
And Ramona's down south, like by San Diego, Temecula, all that area, right?
Correct. We are about northeast of San Diego, approximately 30 minutes. So a little more inland, but surrounded by tons of fantastic horse country.
That is a lovely area down there. You know, my husband and I got married on Coronado Island.
Oh, Coronado's beautiful. Beautiful.
Oh, love it. Long time ago now, but yes, it was great. So I'm going to have to come for a visit because I love San Diego. I'll have to see your new place once you get it all set up and ready to go.
That would be wonderful. And we have trails right here near our housing that we live in, and we can ride for 38 miles of trail.
Love it. Well, I'll tell you, Christina, we are thrilled about this topic today, pet peeves around the barn and on the trail and solutions to solve them. And boy, do we have a lot of pet peeves, don't we? All as horse folk, we have a tendency to have the things that drive us crazy, and especially with our students and things when we're riding instructors. So, you know, we can go off script anytime you would like. I just kind of jotted down a few little things here that I thought we'd start with. But anytime that Jen or you or I want to take a rabbit trail, we are all for that rabbit trail.
Woo-hoo!
So I kind of started us off with tack and equipment. And just kind of thinking in the big old broad scheme of things, what are some pet peeves that you find in regards to barn equipment and things around the barn that when it's not set up right, it really kind of drives you crazy?
Well, of course, safety is always my number one issue. So besides just like having things my way because I'm kind of getting older and set in my ways, the safety issue is what always gets me. So when I see things on the ground that can trip up a horse person or their horse, those things in the barn are one of my huge pet peeves. So pitchforks, shovels, even tools and halters, just grooming tools, you can easily trip over them if you're not paying attention or you're in a hurry.
Yes, and I'll tell you, one of my pet peeves, speaking about tripping over things, is people that get on their horse with a mounting block, and then there's nobody to move that mounting block out of the way. So now you're in the arena as a tripping hazard for the horse or the instructor on the ground or whatever the case may be. So even if you're by yourself and getting on with a mounting block, it's a great idea to kind of do it in the corner of an arena, and that way it kind of stays in the corner so it's out of the way when people are riding. So I agree with you. Tripping hazards are huge.
Yeah. And that's an excellent point that I think a lot of people miss. And I've made the mistake myself. I've mounted in the center of the arena and I'm out there by myself. And then I realize, oh, now I have a mounting block in the center of my arena. And how am I going to get around that? So mounting in the corner, if you don't have someone to remove the mounting block, that's really a great point that I think we've all been guilty of forgetting once or twice. And your horse stumbling while you're on it is no fun. I've been there. And I've been right over the shoulder of a horse and for that very reason, for leaving something out in the arena. So fortunately for me, it was a cheap lesson, but it can be costly both physically and monetarily if it happens.
Absolutely. And I just want to bring up one more thing really quick about the mounting block while I'm thinking of it before we move on to some of these other things is we sometimes have a misnomer in the horse industry that it can also be a dismounting block. And that's incredibly dangerous. They are not meant to step back off the horse and onto. And haven't you experienced that, Christina?
Yes. And I've actually seen people slip right off the mounting block and land on their rump. I've seen people slip where their foot actually went through the stirrup when they were trying to use a mounting block to dismount. So it's extremely unsafe to use a mounting block to dismount. Dismounting properly is just as important, if not even more important than the mounting, because the mounting, you're still in that forward motion and you already know you're precarious, but sometimes people take for granted that they're getting off and it's just safe and they're okay. And it's important to do it properly and not using the mounting block to dismount because it's just not balanced. It's not safe.
It's that whole concept of it's called a mounting block for a reason, not a dismounting block. Just like you
right.
do not worm your horses. It's not a wormer. It's a dewormer. I'm sorry. I'm just throwing that pet peeve in there.
Here she goes down the rabbit hole. See you later, Alice.
Drives me crazy. You're not giving your horse worms. That is bad. Hi, I'll go back on track. Sorry. I deviate.
That's a good one, though. I do that all the time. I sometimes have to say, I'm sorry, but you're not worming your horse. You're deworming your horse.
Well, wait a minute. Let's think about this. When you take medication when you have a cold, you don't take uncold or decold medication. You take cold medication, right? I'm not getting a cold by taking cold medication.
That is true. But
it's valid. It's a valid way
to
say it.
I love it. Leave it to Jed to wrap us back around. I think that's great. All right. Yeah. So schematics aside, we could move on to some other pet peeves around the barn. So let's jump right into tying. Many different ways to tie a horse, cross tie, hard tie, all that kind of stuff. Christina, what are some of your pet peeves and the ways that you think that those types of things should be done?
Cross tying is one of the things that there are a lot of different opinions about it. However, there's really only one safe way to do it, and that's by using either quick release snaps or a breakaway. And I see so many people almost hard tying when they cross tie their horses in an aisleway. So that's one of the things that I see a lot when I'm out in other barns and just out and about, that really, it's definitely a pet peeve, primarily for this, again, for the safety factor, but then also for the convenience factor. When it takes more time, if you have to move your horse, if someone wants to come through the aisle, most cross ties you see in barns are through the center of an aisle, and that can create a blockage in the passageway, any thoroughfare through the barn. So if they're not using a quick release where they can quickly, of course, release that horse and scoot it to the side to allow someone else to come through, or if the horse gets spooked or anything occurs where they need to be able to release that horse or themselves from a dangerous situation, without using those quick release snaps or some kind of a breakaway, they're putting themselves and the other people in the barn and their horse in danger. And I've seen horses who have been cross-tied improperly and had a traumatic experience, and then getting them anywhere near a cross tie again is a huge obstacle because now they've had this traumatic experience and they just don't want to do it again.
Cross tying seems to have that effect on horses, doesn't it? You so often, a horse can have a bad experience on a lot of things. For example, you're having a riding lesson and a crazy dog comes flying through the arena barking and scares the horses. But the horse is not very likely to become terrified of dogs for the rest of his life. But somehow or another, when it comes to cross ties, once a horse has an unpleasant experience on cross ties, that really seems to sit with them, doesn't it?
Yes, absolutely. Because there's no escape route. They can't go forward. They can't go backward. They can't go sideways. So they feel trapped, and it's that fearful situation. And they're naturally going to associate it with those cross ties when they see them. So that's one that's hard to retrain, in a sense, once they've had that kind of traumatic experience.
So get it right the first time, people.
Exactly. And then if you do get them back in there and you're working with that, then you have to be so careful because now they're more sensitive. When if it had just been done correctly to begin with, then you avoid those situations where the horse is traumatized or someone gets hurt or you have to retrain. I'm always of, you have to think about what's best for the horse. And what's best for the horse, if you're doing what's best for the horse, odds are you're probably doing what's best for you as well. So you have to think like the horse. If I were a horse and I were spooked and I were in these cross ties, what would I want to be able to do? And that's get away. So making your cross tie, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, your point is so valid about the quick release naps. And if you have four of them, that's the best, on the horse and on the wall. But if you only have two, I just advise people, on the wall is best, because then you have a lead rope.
Yes. Right. And then you're also not right under that horse's nose or in their, or right in front of their foot path. If you do need to release them, that's the safest place to be, is at the wall. So
yeah,
that's definitely a pet peeve of mine. And then when you go into the hard tying, I've seen people who tie in hard or in places that it would be very easy for the horse to, they tie to a fence or to a corral panel, things that are not secured or things that would break really easily.
Oh, you just nailed it right there, honey. That's my favorite. Just tying them to stupid stuff. Really?
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. I've seen people tie their horses to lawn chairs.
Hello?
And I think, yeah. What happens when your horse gets stooped and starts dragging that lawn chair? So the hard tying is just as critical as cross tying for the same reasons. If it's not safe, it's not going to be effective, and someone or something is going to get hurt. And
yeah.
So tying is definitely a pet peeve, using a quick release knot. And then tying to something that's definitely secure for your horse, and not in an area where you can't get around the horse, or the horse can't move or is blinded by other things where they can be surprised, someone who's approaching them from one side or the other. So giving them enough, you know, that 12 to 18 inches where they can move around and use their peripheral vision to see what's coming in on or around them when they're tied is really important as well.
Something that I see a lot, because I do a lot of trail riding nowadays, I see people tying their horses at these trail rides, and they tie the horse to something low to the ground, below shoulders, knee height,
right,
or to something where the rope, where the knot is attached to the building or the trailer, slides down that low. And then all of a sudden the horse is eating a little bit of hay, and he goes to put his head up to normal height, and he can't because that knot has slipped, and ta-da, we have a vet bill.
Yes.
Yeah, that's tie them to something secure and tie that rope shoulder height or above, people.
Absolutely. And very much so. And I'll tell you, the whole quick release knot concept is so important, but you know, even if a horse does violently pull back, even that quick release knot is not going to come undone. So having some sort of a knife on you in an emergency situation to cut that lead rope or do whatever you have to do is also, I think, a really good idea. I think my big thing about hard tying, ladies, is when people go under the neck of the horse. It drives me crazy.
Oh,
if your horse is hard tied to something, whether it's your trailer or whatever it is, and they get bit by the bee on the bum as you're going under the neck, they're going to smash you in between whatever it is that they're attached to. And people do it all the time to get from side to side. Go around the back of the horse, or go ahead and go far enough in front of the horse if it's tied to something where you can do that without ducking under the neck.
Yeah.
Yes, that's something that's really important.
My favorite is we hard tie our horses here at the barn because we don't have cross ties. So our horses are hard tied. And what I do is if I'm doing something where I'm going to be going back and forth and back and forth from side to side on my horse, I'm clipping or grooming or something, I just untie him, back him up a couple of steps, and hold the lead rope in my hand. He has been taught that when he's got a lead rope on, and we're in the barn, he stands still. He's not wandering all about. But that way, I don't have to worry about the hard tie part. I've got the lead rope in my hand, so I can duck back and forth under his neck as many times and as quickly as I need to. But if something untoward were going to happen, he's not going to pull on anything and have a freakout session. He's just attached to a lead rope attached to my hand. And he has that opportunity to go around me if he has the... If that's there, he's not against a wall where the only place he has to go when he gets bitten by a bug is towards the wall where I might be. And that seems to work pretty well, because the hard tying was something a little bit new for me. Before we moved to Florida, we always had cross ties. And in the English community, that's pretty much what you use. And when we came down here, I had to kind of get the knack of it. It was a learning curve for me to learn to navigate that safely. And the horse I had when we got here, Beaker, if I ducked under his neck while he was hard tied, there was going to be a problem. That was not something that he allowed. I could ground tie that horse and crawl all over him like a monkey, including under his chin, and he didn't care. But when he was hard tied, that was not an expected behavior, and there was going to be an issue. So he taught me an important lesson, and I had a bruised toe to prove it, So I kind of I learned it the hard way, and now that's become one of my pet peeves as well. Is, you know, got to be careful about that, guys. It's just because you hard tie your horse doesn't mean you forget all about where his blind spots are and safe places for you to be.
Yes, really good conversation, ladies. And you transitioned us well, Jen, because you talked a little bit about the English world. And there are some differences in safety of the tack in between English and Western. So, Christina, if we could kind of launch into right now English tack pet peeves that you might have and things that you see a lot that people do that end up probably or possibly having potential issues with them in regards to English tack. What are some of those?
One of the things that I see a lot is people who are not putting their stirrups up properly when they're finished riding or when they're first tacking up, and so their irons are down there banging on their horse's belly. And if you had a piece of iron that heavy banging on your belly, odds are it's going to bruise you. And that's all I'm thinking about. I'm thinking about that iron going boom, 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 and I'm thinking, oh, that's irritating the horse, and that's bruising them, and that's making them sensitive or dull to the point that they've had it so much that they become dull. So that's one of my pet peeves, besides the fact that it's a safety issue as well. So if something were to happen and the horse got his head down and lifted his hind leg to scratch his ear, like you'll see horses do, or scratch something else, and he got his hoof through that iron, you could have a broken leg. And that's not something that you're going to heal easily on a horse. So irons that aren't put up properly, that's probably my biggest pet peeve that I continually see with English tack.
Yes, I agree with you 100%. And the only other one I want to caution people on is where the stirrup leather connects to the saddle. That little keeper needs to be in the down position. Yeah. The only reason why it should be in the up position is if you're jumping over 4 foot, because you're putting so much torque on your stirrups.
Right.
Otherwise, that should be down, or really WD-40'd well, so that, heaven forbid, you're out on the trail or doing something and your iron gets caught on a branch and it comes off, or you fall off, and then that way you can dislocate yourself from the horse by having that stirrup leather come right on off the saddle. So really good point.
And you made a really good point with the WD on that, too, or, you know, any kind of keeping it clean and lubricant, because I've so often gone to help people adjust their stirrups or to take them off, and it's so, the saddle looks clean from the outside, but then when you step underneath there, you can't move that back. And I think, we would be in trouble here. So I actually carry WD in my kit when I go to do lessons off away. I do, specifically for that reason. So I'm glad you brought that up, Chrissy, because I see that so often. And people go, why do you have WD in your bag? Well, that would be why. So that's super important, especially for beginner riders, that's in the open position, because when they're learning, and if you can just eliminate one more chance of them having an injury or a bad experience or getting hurt, you know, I think it's super important that we pay attention to that.
Well, what you just brought up is such a good point, that people clean their tack on top, but they don't necessarily clean their tack underneath. They don't lift up the flap of their English saddle and go, maybe I should do all these billet straps, and maybe I should look at, you know, the keeper. So I think that's just a great point.
Fun trivia.
And dirty tack that's definitely one of my pet peeves. And dirty tack is horrible. First of all, it's just unsightly, and I look at it and go, ugh. I mean, dusty is different. We're surrounded by dust here in the desert, and I'm used to that. So dusty is different than dirty, but dirty, when it becomes dirty to the point that it reduces the functionality of the tack, it's way past time to clean it. Besides with leather, of course, if it's not kept clean and oiled, it becomes dry and brittle, and then it's not safe. So keeping your tack clean, not just for the purpose of having the pride of having your tack clean and that investment, because tack is, we all know, it's not cheap. But the safety factor, again. And then my ultimate pet peeve, though, when it comes to dirty tack, besides an old crusty pad, which I've seen lots of saddle pads and blankets just so full of sweat and dirt, like they're almost brittle. But dirty bits. because I always, this is what I tell my students. I say, would you eat your dinner? Would you go to the dishwasher and get out a dirty fork and eat your dinner? Or would you go to the drawer and get a clean one to eat your dinner? Which one would you prefer? And everyone says the clean one. And I say, okay, so do you want to put the dirty bit in the horse's mouth or the clean bit in the horse's mouth? And then they get it. Because that when you get that buildup, especially on the corners, where it's going to meet the corner of the horse's mouth, that can be just rub them raw. If it's just a bunch of cake, dirt, and hay and little pieces of sand or whatever it is, you know, that's going to make a raw spot in the corner of that horse's mouth. So dirty tack, that's a huge pet peeve.
And that's so complicated to fix, eh?
Yeah, just laziness, huh?
Hey, fun trivia fact here for everybody. We've all seen the folding saddle stands that you can buy at tack shops everywhere in the world. They're made from tubular aluminum. Tubular galvanized metal. When you open that thing up, there are three horizontal surfaces that hold your saddle up. And there are little bands of nylon that hold that centerpiece in place so it doesn't slide left and right. That represents the horse's spine. Well, guess what, people? If you take both of those two little pieces of nylon and you slide them forward or back, so they either go down towards the horse's knees or back towards the horse's bum if it was a horse, you can take that centerpiece and it slides off to the side, left or right. You turn your saddle upside down and you've created a perfect cradle to turn your saddle upside down and clean the bottom of it. That's why it's made that way.
Very nice.
Hey, I know. I have learned something new today. I did not realize that.
Yes, that's why they're made that way, so you can turn them upside down.
Yeah. I love that. And I have several of those, and we use them for cleaning, and I didn't know that. So,
well, it was always very, it's very frustrating to clean the bottom of the saddle because you kind of have to put it on your lap, right? How else do you do it?
Uh-huh.
Right?
And that's what I do. I put it upside down in my lap in a chair.
Yeah. Well, you just take that center piece, which is kind of like the horse's spine. You slide those bands out of the way. You set it off to the side, and the saddle sits perfectly upside down in there, and you can get the bottoms of the flaps. You can get the panels. You can get up underneath the skirt. It's awesome.
You're a smarty.
Ta-da!
Good to know. See, Jen, this is why sometimes we have to have you come out from behind the sound system and actually have the microphone. See? Many reasons why.
That's my contribution for the day.
Yay, Jen.
I love cleaning tack, so I know these things because I actually like to clean tack.
I think it's very relaxing. Uh-huh.
I agree. And growing up, I didn't know about clean tack. I was, you know, one of those backwoods kind of horse kids. And when you mentioned the saddle pads that are brittle, we used to laugh because when do you need to buy a new saddle pad? When the old one breaks in half.
Right.
That's how you do it.
Well, you know, I think the tack cleaning for me too, I besides the fact that I get to check all my, I get to check everything. I make sure it's safe and it's in good repair. And then there's a pride factor in it. I also get to see how that tack is wearing on my horse. And so it gives me a better indication of how it's touching them and how it's affecting the horse and the horse's behavior as well. And sometimes I've noticed, this is wearing a little more here than it is there. And so it gives me a cue to think about maybe adjusting that tack or replacing it with something that's better fitting.
Good point.
So for me, that's another reason that I like cleaning my tack.
Yeah, very good point.
I agree. So Christina, what do you have on Western tack issues that become pet peeves for you that really need to be fixed?
One of the things that I see a lot is people either not using or using improperly their back cinch.
Yes.
And that's a huge pet peeve for me. Again, you know, it goes back to, first of all, the comfort of the horse. If it's not adjusted properly, it's going to be uncomfortable for the horse, or it's going to really be useless. So depending on the type of riding that you're doing, it's not always necessary to use a back cinch. But when you do, it needs to be adjusted properly. So, you know, I've seen them where they're so tight that it's putting just as much or more pressure on the horse's belly than the front cinch. I've seen them where they don't have the little keeper between the front and the back fence, and so that back fence is sliding. And if you have, especially if you have a gelding or even a stallion, that back fence sliding back there can be a little bit uncomfortable. I've seen back fences become bucking straps because people didn't have them adjusted properly. So that's one of the things that I see a lot in the Western world.
I agree. And those back cinches too. Yes. And thank you for saying you don't always need one, because, you know, unless you're dallying a rope around your horn or unless you're going up big, gigantic hills, the back cinch really is not going to do much for you in Western pleasure and horsemanship, right?
Right.
It's really not. So to be able to have a back cinch, you know, you really have to say, why do I have this? And then, boy, the people that put it on so loose, I'm thinking the horse is going to kick at a fly in its belly and you're going to have a three-legged horse.
Right.
And that's going to be really rough
kind of like,
on that horse when its leg is caught. Absolutely.
Bad ads. Right. Here we come.
It's kind of like the iron on the English saddle. It's the same concept. It's just one more hazard if it's not adjusted properly.
Absolutely. So how about now, let's move into kind of our last topic area, which is things that we use to feed our horses. So whether it's our actual feeders that are there at the facilities where we board, waterers, maybe hay nets when we go out and about and we take our horses out with the trailer. What are some of your pet peeves in regards to those things, Christina?
Oh, well, this is a pertinent topic right now because just having made a cross-country move, we were, during our 10 days, we stopped at 8 different barns along the way. And every barn had a different facility and different hay nets, different feeders, buckets, you name it. And I have seen over the last 10 days more pet peeves than I could even begin to count. And of course, again, it always goes back to the safety. So if the feeders or the water buckets aren't put at a height that's appropriate for the horse, if they're not in good repair, and I had seen both of those. We had some water buckets and feed buckets that were hung right about knee level to the horse, just barely above knee level to the horse. And I thought, my little mare is going to have her feet in that bucket in no time. And so that's one of the things that I'd seen. And then, of course, the hay feeders in one of the places that we stopped, super nice barn, but all of the hay feeders were broken on the edges and they had little sharp corners where they were hay feeder was pulling away, and I thought, oh, now my mare's probably going to get herself cut on that. We had three horses with us, but one is just always prone to getting into things that she shouldn't. And so having the buckets hung at the proper height and clean, of course, goes back to talking about the dirty fork or the clean fork. It's the same thing. Do you want to drink out of a clean bucket or a dirty bucket? And horses, we all know, if you clean a bucket and you start running a hose in it, I don't know a horse that can resist that. So clean water, clean buckets, extremely important to me, especially in the heat of summer. But then your feeders and your latches on doors, I've seen those, over the last 10 days that were not appropriate, not safe. Making sure everything is in good repair and is adjusted properly to the safety and the comfort of the horse.
Now, did you come across the majority of, because this varies a great deal depending on what part of the country you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Were most of the feeders and waterers and hay dispensing devices hung up in that they were attached permanently to the wall, or were they mostly hung up with snaps?
Every place we stopped at had a permanent feeder on the wall.
Interesting.
Some of them were in great repair. Some of them were not. To the point that in one place, I actually asked them to take them down because I couldn't see it as anything but a hazard to the horse.
Yeah.
So they were, most of these facilities that we stopped at, and we stopped Georgia, New Mexico, Arizona, Texas, and gosh, I can't remember one more in Arizona. So we stopped in several different areas and with different disciplines in each area. So it was a mixture of community. But across the board in all of these boarding facilities, everyone had mounted hay feeders. Some of the buckets were on the ground. Some of them were mounted on the wall. Some of them were great. But then there were a number of issues in the aisleway, not great places to tie your horses. And then a lot, what I saw a lot of was just things that were in ill repair.
Yeah.
And those always become safety issues because if it's broken, it's broken for a reason. And right. So that's how I see it.
Yeah. Well, I asked that because one of my pet peeves when it comes to, stalls and barns are the ubiquitous double-ended snap that everybody has millions of in their barns. Putting the snap
right.
on so that that little sticky outy part that allows you to open it with your thumb points towards the horse. That really needs to
right.
point down towards the wall. And I had experience with this early on in my career because we had a horse that took his eyelid off with one.
Oh.
And I have interviewed no less than 3 different veterinarians. And universally, the most common eye injury they come across that requires a veterinarian to show up and give you a great big bill at the end of the day is horses catching their eyelids on double-ended snaps.
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So I'm obsessed with that the snaps have to be going the correct direction.
Yes. And I've seen that. Actually, this week I've seen that.
Oh, wow.
In a number of places. So I know exactly what you're speaking of. But, and don't get me wrong, there were some fantastic facilities along the way, but there were some that just, like I said, I actually had to ask them to take feeders and buckets off the wall because they were just placed in places that weren't safe for the horses. So
yeah, you really do have to, you nailed it. You have to take each individual horse. You can't have every bucket at the same height because you're going to have horses that need the bucket higher, and you can have the horses that need the bucket lower. You're going to have horses that need buckets with no handles that are on the floor because they can't have things on the wall at all.
Right. And there was one facility we stopped at that I thought was really fantastic because their wall-mounted feeders were adjustable. They had different heights of bars, so you could move it up or down according to the size of your horse.
Oh, that's handy.
And they had the same setup for their buckets, which was fantastic. And I thought, that's pretty savvy. I really liked that we saw that. That was when we went through Texas. And I thought, well, you know, it is Texas. So that was pretty good.
Cool.
Big horse state. Well, Christina, it was so good to have you on today. I so appreciate you taking the time after you seriously just moved across country to be on the show. Thank you so, so much. And how can our listeners find you and find out more about you?
I have a website, so it's www.appliedhorsemanship.com. You can go there and you can connect with me there, or you can connect with me through email at the same address, just appliedhorsemanship@gmail.com. I'm pretty
great.
Excited.
Well, thank you,
I'm thankful for the opportunity to be on today, and it was kind of fun, the topics, especially considering we had just come across country. So everything was pretty fresh to me on a lot of those things. And I really enjoyed our time. Thank you.
Well, she had such great ideas. I learned all kinds of great ideas from our guest, Christina. And what we're going to do now, we're going to take a little break for a song. And then we're going to come back and we're going to chat with Beth Powers about her favorite pet peeves. And just as important, her clever ways of solving them. We'll be right back.
She was a wild young Mustang, no bridle, no reins, full of fire and spirit inside. The last of her rare breed, born to run free, the horse that nobody could ride. 100 young takers all tried to break her. Their stories were told far and wide. Sure as the wind blows, each cowboy got thrown by the horse that nobody could ride. Then down out of Cheyenne came a quiet and shy
And we just all love Mustangs around here at Horses in the Morning. That was Kristen Harris with The Horse Nobody Could Ride. You can find Kristen Harris's music at kristinharris.com. That's K-R-I-S-T-Y-N. You can also find her on iTunes. And you're listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by the Certified Horsemanship Association. Say that three times fast.
We are so excited to have our next guest on the show, Jen. This is Beth Powers, and Beth is an educator who has instructed people both young and old in the sport of horseback riding. She was 20 years at the YMCA as an equestrian director at a year-round resident camp, and she also has been published in American Camping Association magazine. She also does quite a bit with CHA. She's not only a certified instructor for us, but she is our president-elect, which is very exciting. She'll be our president next year during our 50th anniversary. She's also been a presenter at Equine Affair in Columbus and has served on the board for the American Youth Horse Council and is an AQHA professional horseman. Hello, Beth. How are you today?
Hi, Christy. I'm doing well.
So how goes everything there in Belle Fountain, Ohio? Explain to our listeners where exactly you're located.
Well, Belle Fountain is in West Central Ohio. If you look at a map, Columbus is in the middle of the state. Toledo is up by Lake Erie, and Belle Fountain is right in between. We are the highest point in Ohio. And the world's first concrete street in America is in Belle Fountain. Those are our two claims to fame.
Well, who would have known? And I've been to Belle Fountain. I've been out your way quite a few times, actually, and I think it's lovely.
It is quite beautiful. It's a little hilly.
It's
hilly,
a nice part of the state.
And it's a little dry right now, like lots of places.
Well, I was telling Jen that she needs to be extra special nice to you because you're going to be my boss here starting next year as the president of the Certified Horsemanship Association. So you can't, you know, be messing around, okay, Jen? No messing around with Beth.
I will watch my P's and Q's. Got it.
Well, we're so excited about this topic today. You know, CHA has a special part on our website for pet peeves around the barn and solutions to solve them. So for anyone listening, after you're done today listening to our show, you can go there and just click under magazine and articles and a big pet peeve section comes up and you're going to have all kinds that I'm sure resonate with some of you out there and you can see different solutions to them. So we talked a little bit about tack issues and those types of things with Christina. Now we're going to go ahead and get into the actual ground handling interview portion of today's show with Beth. So Beth, overall, what are some of your pet peeves in regards to ground handling and how do you want to go ahead and tackle them and let your students and others know how to solve them?
Well, Christy, I like to start the very beginning from even approaching a horse. Whenever you're working around horses, I like to have my students prepared and ready with all the equipment and all the necessary things they're going to need. I like them to gather their grooming tools already and put them where they're going to be grooming the horse. I want them to get their saddle and bridle already ready to go, get the bridle untangled, hung up neatly, so that the whole area is ready to go. So the last thing you need to do is just go out and get your horse.
That's a really good idea.
My students, our halters are all labeled and hung up in a particular place. The lead ropes we had for catching horses, especially out in the pasture, were not 10-foot lead ropes. I like shorter ropes so that less chance to get caught up on something or someone to step on it or to get tangled up in it. Because, you know, beginners, putting on a halter can be very difficult. And the less things you have hanging and dragging, I think the safer the situation is.
I would agree 100%. And then once they get it on, then by leading them, you have less to get wrapped around their hand and all those types of things too.
So true. So true. And then, so with a shorter rope, then you can, you don't have to worry about the horse stepping on it. You can then look where you're going. That's a big mistake with lots of people leading horses. They look at the horse. Well, you need to know where you're going. So I always tell my students, look up to where you're going. You know, have the rope not wrapped around your hand, but gathered, and some people call it a figure eight or a butterfly. Look where you're going. The horse is going to follow you. So that way you can, if there's other people getting horses, you're not going to run into the back end of somebody, walking around corners of the barn. You need to look up, look out. Same thing like when you're riding. It's just safer to look where you're going.
So true. And, you know, there's a lot of people now that are very laissez-faire about when they leave their horse, especially if it's their own horse in their backyard, those kinds of things. And they'll leave that horse with just one hand with a horse dragging behind them. Or the horse might be excited and they'll let that horse go ahead and go in front of them. What do you feel about that?
Oh, that's, again, that's just an accident waiting to happen. Or something people do. They don't even get a lead rope. They're just got their hand wrapped around the halter. You know, you got that ring on the bottom of the halter, which is a perfect place to get your thumb stuck in. The horse jerks up. You could lose a finger someplace there. That's a dangerous situation as well.
Yes, I used to work part-time at a barn years ago that they would leave halters out on their horses, big pet peeve of mine, that were not breakaway, first of all, so the horses could get hung up on stuff while they were in turnout, and then they would literally lead them in by the halter, and they'd have one horse on either side, and they're leading them by the halter, and I'm thinking, oh boy, there's so many things there that could go wrong. There's a reason for a lead rope, and we should use them.
Oh, definitely. Now, the place I used to work, we had 50 head of horses. Nobody had halters on. But before I turned anybody else out, if there was a new horse, you know, the old guys would know, come into the barn, and that's what we do. And there was a routine we established, and you put on halters out in the pasture, and then you went out and caught them and brought them in. So the new horses figured out, hey, if I want food, I need to get in the queue also. And they knew the routine, and they would stand there quietly for the halter. Another thing that bugs me too is when people let out horses and they'll just fling the halter off the horse's head, or they don't walk out to the pasture and make him stand. The horse is raising his head and jerking away. You know, halters have buckles on them, and I've seen those things come back and you can get smacked in the head with that.
Yes, and then you're teaching your horse to run off, and sometimes they can kick out in glee and get you. So you're absolutely right. Not only is leading important, but boy, catching and releasing, I think, is huge. And lots of pet peeves there and ways to solve them so that you don't end up getting hurt, since, you know, we had talked about earlier in the show, safety. You know, all these pet peeves are not just because, oh, I think it's prettier that way, or, oh, it just makes me happier that way. It really is safety. Safety for you, safety for the horse, safety for the equipment you're using, those types of things.
And this is just teaching good manners to the horse. You know, the horse will learn how to run out of the barn unless you teach them otherwise. The horse will learn how to run in the barn unless you teach them otherwise. It's just basically good manners, which makes everybody safe.
So now that we have our horse and we've led him over to where we're going to groom him, we already went over with Christina quite in depth about the tying portion, so we probably don't have to worry about that. But the actual grooming portion itself, whether it's picking feet or brushing mane and tail or body, what are some of your pet peeves in regards to the whole grooming process?
Well, one of my big things is when you have your grooming tools and you put them on the ground next to the horse. And
yes.
Then, so now you're bending over, and horses are always kicking at flies and things like that, or stepping on your equipment. Find a place to put that brush, that hoof pick, up on the stall wall or in a little basket hanging there someplace, so you don't have to bend over to get your grooming tools. That's one of my pet peeves. Another one, and maybe, I don't know if it's just me, but especially in the spring when the horse is shedding out so much hair, and where I used to work, we had lots of horses, so we were grooming and saddling 20 horses for, you know, a program, and you put that brush back full of horse hair.
Yes.
Then you have to come along and clean it out for the next horse. And two, that's problematic if a horse has rain rot or something, some kind of skin fungus. Now the next horse down the line, they can get it as well, too. Doesn't take very long just to clean out some of that extra hair, whack it on the side. The brush on the side of the stalls falls out easily. The barn sparrows come along and pick it up and use it for their nest.
And yes, they do. Because they have a pillow in their nest. That's right. Well, then, you brought up a great point, Beth, when you talked about, you know, not having your equipment on the ground. One thing that I see all the time that drives me crazy is knees on the ground. People will kneel down next to their horse to put on, let's say, a polo wrap if they use those, or their sports medicine boots or whatever. Maybe they're putting the polish on their horse's hoof, you know, or whatever the case may be. And you can't get away when your knees are on the ground. If you're in a squat position, you can push off the horse if you have to get away. So I really appreciated you saying that. Because that's a really important thing, is on the ground with horses and how we can get away safely.
Right. And now when you're going to clean feet, and I sometimes am guilty of this. I got too much going on. I try to do too many things at once. I'm talking to somebody, giving directions, as I'm leaning down, trying to pick up a foot. I should be paying attention exactly to what I'm doing, because that foot can come down quickly on my foot, and it has. Back feet, of course, you know, horses kick out. It flies on their belly. The belly on your skin, skin on your belly is very thin. So it's very sensitive to the awful nasty flies if you aren't paying attention to what you're doing. Again, the safety thing, you can get a hoof to your head.
So these are some really good points. So what do you see as far as your pet peeves in regards to saddling and bridling and getting kind of tacked up and ready to go?
Well, again, not having all my equipment ready to go. When the horse is standing there, you know, if I got to go to the tack room and find something, now it's different if something breaks. But again, if I'm all ready with everything I need, the saddle, the bridle, the blanket, so forth, and I can get down to business. I don't like it when a horse has to stand there while people are coming and going trying to find stuff. Because as you know, horses standing aisle get into trouble. They can pull that lead knot and go off and visit friends, or they can be fighting with somebody, or a fly can come by. You know, that fight or flight instinct is genetically imprinted in a horse, and if they're tied up, they want to get away. And if you aren't ready to go riding, something can happen. Whereas the problem could be avoided if you were just ready.
And I so appreciate you saying and talking about the claustrophobia. I talk a lot on the show about working at medieval times because it was a lot of pet peeves all the time. The show must go on, and let's just get it done as fast as we can, and come on. And the putting the halter around the horse's neck while the horse is still tied, and then leaving. Going in the tack room to get the bridle and coming back. And meanwhile, something had spooked the horse, and now the horse is hanging there by its neck. So definitely untying that horse before we put the halter around its neck, or even releasing the lead rope from the halter, put the halter around the neck. You still have a catching aid, and then putting the reins over the horse's neck instead of letting the reins drag on the ground as you're bridling, so that you don't end up breaking those reins. And especially once the bit is in the horse's mouth, you don't end up hurting the horse's mouth if they step on their own reins. So those things are huge too.
And another really simple thing is when you put the tack on the saddle, walk around to the off side and look and see what's going on. It takes 2 seconds to walk over there, untwist everything, get it organized, walk back around. You know, when you reach underneath, make sure again you're facing the front end of that horse. Don't give your head, don't let your head be a target for a back foot. I see people do that all the time. They reach underneath and their head is facing towards the back foot instead of the front. Again, these are just simple things you can do and make it a habit. I've seen so many people cinch up a horse really tight and they think, this cinch doesn't work. It's too short. We need a new one. Well, if they had walked to the offside, they'll see that it's got a twist in it. It fit fine yesterday. It's going to fit fine today if you untwist it.
That is such a good point, Beth. The off side of the horse, nobody goes over there. Same thing with the noseband, right? The cabochon on English bridles. They'll stick that noseband on top of the cheekpiece on the off side. How many times have we seen that?
Yes. Or how many times have you put the throat latch over your right rein?
Yeah,
oh, that's a good one. Yeah.
Why is this right rein so short? Oh, look at that.
Check both sides of the horse, please. There seems to be some kind of genetic encoding in horses too, that the moment you drop the halter off of his muzzle and have it round his neck so that you can put the bridle on, If you blink your eyes or turn your back for 5 seconds, that horse invariably puts his head down and gets either the lead rope or the cross tie wrapped around the top of his head. And the next thing you know, there's a horse galloping down the aisle. They've got a knack for that.
Yes.
They sure do. I'll tell you a funny example. I had, where I was working at a ranch once, and we had, you know, placed the hard tie of the horse, just kind of one of these upright pole things, and, you know, with the kind of the horizontal type of framing on it. And the horse was tied correctly with her hide. Everything is really good. And she went, instead of having the horse be perpendicular to the rail, the horse had become parallel to the rail. And she's putting the surcingle on to go and lunge the horse. And she puts the surcingle on, and she attached her horse to the thing that she was tying the horse to. And she's saying, oh my gosh, the horse is really fat. It wasn't on this number last time I did it, but I guess I haven't lunged him in a while. And she cinched him up and he was attached. And thank goodness he was a mellow horse and we were able to go over there and unattach him. But yes, these little things we don't think about. Perpendicular is better than parallel when you're attaching. Yeah.
Yeah, perpendicular is always better than parallel. Oh my gosh.
That is so funny. Or how about the novice student who puts that bridle on, puts the curb bit on upside down?
Oh, yeah. And
sticks past his nose and thinks, I always have my students sort of put the bridle on their head so they can see how the bit's supposed to go, especially if you get a jointed, like a Tom Thumb or something, and that gives them a better idea how it goes in the horse's mouth. I hate it when someone just walks up there with a bridle, it's all mangled and tangled and tries to shove the bit in the horse's mouth when it clearly is not supposed to go that way, and the horse knows it. But these wonderful lesson horses sometimes will just say, okay, and open their mouth, and in it goes, and you go to check it and think, what the heck is this? How does
that That is not going to work. Well, and then I guess another one in regards to curbs, I'm so glad you brought up leverage bits. You know, when you don't take that curb chain and make it flat against the horse's chin groove, and you just let it be all tangled up there, and it provides so much pressure then to the horse, unnecessary pressure.
Yeah.
Versus having it be nice and smooth.
Some heavier range, you know. If you're trying to work on your student to develop a really light touch, if you've got a heavier leather rein wrapped on the other side of that curb and they start to manipulate it, it's going to change how that curb works.
Yes, it sure is. And I've also seen, you know, when you have Kimber Wicks and things like that, where you can attach the rein either to the upper part, which is the snaffle, more direct pressure, or the lower part, which is the more leverage pressure, and they'll have the right rein on one and the other rein on the other.
Well, his horse is stiffer on one side than the other.
Oh, the things we have all seen when you've been in the industry long enough. Pretty entertaining.
If there's a way to mess it up, we've tried it, you know?
Well, and horses are so good at being saints about it. Like you said, Beth, your good old school horse will just tolerate it and be like, I know that's wrong, but I'm going to open my mouth. Hopefully the instructor will figure it out and let the kid know that they did it wrong. They're just saints.
There you go.
So what are your overall thoughts, Beth, on horses getting to rub on you and kind of treat you as a scratching post?
Well, I don't think that's a really good idea. Because as an adult, I can stand my ground, but it's that horse, again, it's a learned behavior. And if he starts to do that on a 7-year-old, boom, that kid's on the ground now crying, and you've got an unsafe situation because you might get stepped on. I mean, I know horses, they get itchy and scratchy on all over the place, and I'll be happy to invite them into my space and scratch them and rub on their ears and things like that. But, I don't like them rubbing against me. I'm not a scratching post.
This is an excellent one here. This is one of my pet peeves too. And the most common excuse is, well, why shouldn't he rub on me? He's itchy. Well, you could get hurt. Well, he doesn't mean to hurt me. That statement, the horse didn't mean to hurt me, does not forgive the fact that you've still got hurt. You still got hurt. It doesn't matter whether or not he meant to hurt you. Gosh, I fell down the stairs and broke my back. Well, I didn't mean to fall down the stairs. Well, you still fell down the stairs and broke your back, didn't you? He doesn't have to mean to hurt you to physically hurt you. The intent has no bearing. It does not matter what his intent was. You could very easily get hurt and very easily get badly hurt when the horse can just randomly scratch on you as if you were a post. He's a horse. He weighs 1,200 pounds. And if he scratches his head on his friend's butt, his friend is not going to get hurt because his friend also weighs 1,200 pounds. It's not that way with a horse, people. That is not an excuse, and it's not a validation of letting your horse use you for a scratching post. Okay, I feel better. I'm going to take a deep breath.
You feel better now? Good.
And a sedative, yes. Phew.
Well, even that should apply to minis and ponies, too.
Oh, absolutely.
They're not stuffed animals. I've seen people that we had this pony, again, where I used to work at camp, and he was a wonderful little pony, and they were leaning on him like a couch and fussing with him and doing all kinds of stuff with them until one day he says, I've had enough. And he whacks them, kicks some kid. And I had to kind of tell the staff, look, you're in his personal bubble. You don't want him rubbing on you because that is not safe. You have to realize that he's given you all kinds of signals and he's done at being a piece of furniture for you.
Yeah,
just because
yeah.
he's small and he's mm-hmm. easy to lay on. He is yeah. still an animal. And that's not fair to him either. And you're right that when a huge animal scratches on you, it's not safe and it's not really something that he does because he loves you. You're just something convenient.
Right. You're a scratching post.
If this was a tree, you'd scratch on the tree.
Yeah. So solution.
A pitching post,
Here's what I do.
Just make sure that you're a human, right?
Right.
You're a human, I don't care what you are. I'm just itchy and whatever.
Yeah. The Glenn's pony in particular is a very itchy little fellow. But all horses' faces are itchy, especially after you take the bridle off. So
yes.
I want to give them some relief for that because it's not just I itch. For some horses, it really is a nerve reaction. They need to scratch it or they're going to be very grumpy. So I've taught my horses when they get their bridle off, and they have the halter around their neck, not around their nose, that they have to take one full step back when I say so. I walk towards them and give them a hand signal. And then there is a towel presented, and they can rub like crazy on that towel. And that is literally happens immediately after the bridle comes off. I don't walk away and hang the bridle up. I don't leave the horse's presence. The bridle goes over my elbow. The towel is in my back pocket and ready to go. So as the second that happens, he knows he can't rub on me right away. He has to take the step back that is prompted by a hand signal, and then he can rub till his heart's content. So he gets that out of his system so he's not tempted to disobey or rub on me because it's just an infuriating itch. And it gets the job done safely. So there's a sequence of events, and there's a trained signal in there that says, this is the towel that you get to rub on and rub like crazy. And I can hold it away from my body so that I can use my arms to take that movement of his head so he's not knocking me over. So it's a trained situation and not just the horse walking up behind you and knocking you on your butt.
Well, and I love that it's a towel and not you that he's rubbing on.
Yes, there's a towel and it's held at arm's length. Thank you very much.
Well, and Beth, you were talking about that whole trained response. So this kind of leads us into our next thing that we're going to talk about in regards to feeding treats by hand and how much so many of our students, especially the little kids, want to do that so badly. What are your thoughts on that and some of the solutions?
Well, little teeny kids, it's best to put it in a feed bucket so they can feed them because there's something about being able to give food to another living creature that is something human about us. I like to give food from my garden to friends.
Food is love, people. Food is love.
Food is love.
Yes, food is love.
And, a safety thing for little kids, definitely, is to put that piece of apple or carrot or something in that feed bucket so that horse can eat it safely and then so little fingers aren't chewed on accidentally.
Yeah. We don't want to put the fingers at risk. No.
Correct. No. We'll do sometimes carrot stretches where we move the horse away from where it's tied. So it's in a set area, kind of like you're talking about, Jen. You move the horse back and that's rubbing time. You move the horse away from where we tie it so they're not always nibbling and looking. And we just do a stretch to the right, a stretch to the left, and a stretch like you're making the horse bow in between the front legs, and we call it good. But we don't do it every single ride either. Otherwise, it also becomes expected. Yeah. And the horse will stop in their little, I want my carrot stretch area.
Yeah.
And they just get kind of demanding.
That's right.
Right?
And that's something that has been a real learning curve for Glenn, because Scooter, his pony, is so incredibly food motivated that we had to set down a very hard, fast rule that there are no treats allowed in the grooming area. There are no treats allowed over the stall door, just ever, never. Because as soon as it happens once, he becomes a raving maniac. He's uncontrollable. It's all he can obsess over. So there are very strict rules about that, where and how he's allowed to have treats. And that's been tough for Glenn, because he's one of those guys that food is love. Yeah.
Every horse is a little different too, as far as their motivation. Like my horse, I give her peppermint, not all the time, but some days when we had long days, you know, 6-8 trail rides, I would give her peppermint before she went out, and she would get 3, no more. And I would show her my open hand, and then she would realize, oh, that's it.
She understood, all gone. Yeah,
all gone. And there's something, I know it's not very safe, but there's something magical of having a giant carrot and giving it to someone who's afraid of horses, and you've gone through a whole gamut of a lesson and everything, and have that horse nibble like the end of the carrot. That's just the look of a person's face.
Treats are such a slippery slope, aren't they?
Yes.
They are. Yes. It's so hard because so many of us, like you and horses, we all have such a different feel, but I think you're right. As a human being, we want to feed other sentient beings. It's part of our nature. So it's such a slippery slope, but I think the takeaway there is if there are going to be treats in you, your life, and your horse's lives, you need to take responsibility for that process, plain and simple.
Yes, you don't like to create a monster that's chewing your pockets open to find stuff.
Any horse that bites because of treats, it's the human's fault. So you need to take responsibility, and you need to fix it.
Right.
And you don't fix it by smacking him in the nose. Thank you.
Correct. Pepe, again, are you feeling better? This show is making you feel better, isn't it, Jen? You're getting stuff off your chest.
My blood pressure is dropping. I feel so relaxed. It's fantastic.
See, Beth and I are like therapists to you today. We are your therapists.
This is a therapy show. That's going to be the name of this. The title of this show is Jen's Therapy. All these pent-up frustrations I didn't know I had.
I love it. Well, Beth, we so appreciate you being on the show today. Is there any kind of parting words you want to give and let people know how they can find you for more information?
Oh, how they can find me? Well, I am on CHA Instructors' website. My information is on there, my phone number and email. And I guess my one parting word I say is, you can lead a horse to water, but a pencil must be led.
That's funny.
Love it.
I like that. Well, thanks a lot, Beth.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thanks, Beth.
Well, that was so much fun talking with Beth. She and I see eye to eye on a lot of things.
Yes, you guys do. And you were able to get so much stuff off your chest. I think that's
so
great.
Much better. Yeah. That's going to save me so much money on therapy.
You're welcome.
Say, before we wrap things up, I think you had one more quickie pet peeve solution for us.
I do. One that didn't come up today that I think is worth mentioning is hay string. Whether you're using the small bales or the large bales, a lot of these bales are baled with string. And a big pet peeve of mine is when you feed them to your horses. So they end up in the feeder with the horses or on the ground or wherever you're feeding. And I'll tell you, we had a horse at a barn that I worked at years ago that ingested one of those.
Ooh.
And we actually were lucky enough to, when he colicked, we had no idea he had ingested a hay string. We didn't know about that. But we went ahead and we did mineral oil, and it came out in the manure. There was this lovely hay string all wrapped up. And I'll tell you, that would have been a really expensive colic surgery or even death for this poor school horse. So huge pet peeve of mine, clean up your hay strings.
Yeah, absolutely. Pick up those suckers, put them in the trash, make them into a giant ball, and start charge everybody a nickel to come and see it.
That's right. And we had a gal at one of the barns where I worked. She was great. She would actually take the hay strings and make hats out of them with big brims, like big gardening hats. She actually made furniture out of them. I mean, she was really creative. She would braid these things and do all kinds of cool stuff with them. So there are ways to recycle them if you wish to be that creative, too.
You can recycle hay strings. I want to see pictures on the Facebook page. Thank you very much, everyone, on Horses in the Morning. Go to Facebook and search Horses in the Morning. Go to the Facebook page and give us pictures of your recycled hay string, please.
Great idea.
Well, you can find links to today's guests and the show notes at horsesinthemorning.com. And you can follow Horses in the Morning on Facebook, as I just mentioned. Search for Horses in the Morning. And you can also follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. And you can have every single one of your favorite Horse Radio Network shows with you wherever you go by downloading our free app for your iPhone or Android. Just go to your app store and search Horse Radio Network. And you'll never have to miss a live episode again. And this episode comes to you every month on the
third Tuesday of the month.
Third Tuesday.
For Certified Horsemanship Association. And if you want to find us, the best way is just to go to chainstructors.com. And you can find out about clinics, conferences, or you can search for an instructor or barn near you.
They have a great search engine in there to find an instructor who is certified with the Certified Horsemanship Association. And if you don't have a riding instructor and you've often thought to yourself, how do I find a good one? That's how you do it. It's like going and looking for somebody who's got a college degree in something. Go to CHA. You can look right on there. It tells you exactly what those people have passed on their tests and what they're qualified to do. It's a great resource. And we'll see y'all tomorrow.